From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Jennifer Westaway sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. 4 years after Florida elections scarred the nation's democratic process, election watchers fear an encore performance. A string of scandals, including dubious felon purge lists, lost electronic votes, and accusations of black voter suppression, have many fearing that the next presidential election in the Sunshine State might look even more cloudy than the last. Tonight on Point, voting in Florida, avoiding another fiasco. We begin with an overview of the issues that have dogged the Florida election reform process. Earlier, I spoke with Ann Louise Bardeck, a political reporter for Slate.com and author of Cuba Confidential, Love and Vengeance in Miami and Havana. I asked her how Florida was setting the stage for a sequel 4 years after the state's infamous election count.
It's not looking particularly promising. One overall problem we have here is that the new Secretary of State, who replaced Catherine Harris, who, as you may recall, sort of became a lightning rod for much of the criticism regarding the 2000 election. The new Secretary of State is a woman named Glenda Hood, and she was handpicked by Governor Jeb Bush to replace Harris. And she has invited a lot of scrutiny, much of it negative, for some of her actions.
Now, she would be a longtime Republican, presumably, then.
Huh? She was the Republican mayor of Orlando, which is one of the more conservative counties, regions in Florida, not necessarily the city. And she had a kind of bumpy ride there where some people in Orlando thought that she needed to get out of Dodge, as one person put it, because there were, turned out to be, I think, a $24 million deficit, which she said was $2 million. So some her critics say she needed a new job and that Jeb Bush needed another loyalist. And she's certainly a Republican Party loyalist. The questions that are troubling to some people is that the governor, whose brother is one of the presidential candidates, gets to select who is the chief elections officer. That's what the Secretary of State is. And so there's an overall criticism whenever she's perceived as doing something that's not fair, that he picked her as opposed to letting a nonpartisan commission pick her, and that she is, again, like Catherine Harris, a very dedicated, loyal Republican.
Well, let's talk specifically about some of the things that are coming up in Florida that may be an issue in November. The felon list.
Well, the felon list is very interesting. I just want, a lot of people don't realize that there's quite a history with this felon list. Florida's laws to keep felons off the list go back to when the slaves were freed, and there was a fear that the freed slaves would be voting the wrong way. And so they instituted a lot of harsh laws after the Civil War to kind of limit African-American participation. Most people do not know that in the 1970s, under Governor Askew, he pretty much changed all that, and he made it that anybody who finished their term in prison automatically got their right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the 1970s. He was a Democratic governor, and he argued that if you pay your debt to society and you finish your prison term, you pay restitution, that's the end of it, you get to vote, which is the case in most of the states in the United States.
Right.
Now, what happened is in the 1980s that gets politicized by Governor Martinez, who was a Republican, and he starts to cut away at that. By the time Jeb Bush comes to power, he and Catherine Harris instituted what are called purge lists. Their argument was that felons that shouldn't be voting without authority are voting, that they hadn't applied to have their rights restored. So critics of Harris in 2000 will tell you that 58,000 former felons were denied their right to vote. Mm-hmm. I may add that at that point, almost 60% of them happen to be African American.
Happen to be.
You can be on that felon list for a bounce check. You can be on that felon list for a marijuana possession.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a whole lot if you're a poor person living in Florida to have been found guilty of one of these infractions. That will make you a felon. Being on the felon list does not mean that you're a murderer,
right,
necessarily. And most of these people are very poor people. Today, the statistic is 52% African American.
Well, bring us up to 2004 in that felon list, because I understand now that it's become so unreliable that it isn't even going to be used.
Glenda Hood and Jeb Bush put out this felon list, and they, I think it was 47,000 people on this list. Then they said the list would be secret, and no one could see the list. Well, the media sued about that, and they said, how could the felon list be secret? You know what happened in 2000. It turned out all those people were on the wrong list and all that. So they sued. The courts ruled in their favor. The list became public. And lo and behold, they found out that most everybody on the list was an African American. And guess what else? Precious few Latinos or Hispanics. And why the thinking went is because generally it is believed that they vote more Republican. So that became a big firestorm here. And so after there was tremendous outcry, they said, okay, we take back that list. But what most people don't understand is that list is being used today as we speak in seven counties in Florida, because Governor Bush and Glenda Hood have refused to come forward and say, we forbid you to use the list.
Oh.
So they're saying, oh, we have no right to meddle in the counties. What can we do if the counties want to use it? But a lot of people feel that they should exert the moral authority and say it is against the law to use a list that has been proven to be flawed.
Yeah, at the very least inaccurate. Okay, electronic voting. In recent elections, smaller elections, this has been tried in Florida with quite variable results. What's going to happen in November with this?
We've had quite a few failures in Florida. We had the governor's race in 2002. We've had problems as recently as a week ago here when they did a trial run and the backup system didn't work. Here's the problem with the Florida system in a nutshell. Is Governor Bush and his legislature passed a bill and endorsed this bill outlawing manual recounts. So the bottom line is that if these machines fail, and we know they failed on four different occasions to date, quite seriously on some occasions, there's no remedy for counting the vote.
And I understand that a coalition of election reform groups actually took this to
court.
Yeah, they took it to court, and the ruling was something like the right to vote is guaranteed, but a perfect voting system is not?
That is exactly right. I cover Latin America and Cuba issues, and a lot of people don't realize that in the recent recall election of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, every person there got a receipt, a paper receipt for their vote.
And that's
no
not going to happen.
To have a receipt in Florida.
That's not going to happen in Florida. Okay, and the other big issue that we're reading about on an almost daily basis is what happened to some of the African-American voters who had state troopers arriving at their homes in recent weeks. What happened there?
This is a touchy issue, but what I'm hearing on the street from other reporters and officials who don't want to speak publicly on it is, I'm sorry to say, but there appears to be quite an aggressive action to limit the African-American vote in Florida. They're saying that they're concerned about fraudulent absentee ballots. And as I wrote in my Slate piece and as I wrote in my book, boy, you got a lot to worry about with absentee ballots. But you know what? It's not with the African-American vote. Generally, in the Latino vote, and it's in the Cuban areas. Again, the state legislature and Jeb Bush and Glenda Hood, they just changed the law here. You no longer need a witness for an absentee ballot. Well, guess what? In 1998, the mayor's race of Miami was overturned. Why? Because of the number of dead people who got up and made it to the polls and voted. I am not making this up. One man's name was Manuel Yip. Guess what? Manuel Yip voted four times since he died in 1994. This is a tradition.
And not a proud one. Anne Louise, thank you for joining us tonight.
You bet.
Anne Louise Bardeck is a political reporter for Slate.com. She spoke with me from Miami. We're talking tonight about the Florida election and whether the Sunshine State has done enough to prevent another cloudy election result. Can you believe that 4 years later, we're still trying to figure out how to count votes in Florida? With a race this close, are you afraid that we'll be waiting until December to know who the next president is again? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Tallahassee is Lucy Morgan, Tallahassee Bureau Chief of the St. Petersburg Times. Welcome, Lucy.
Hi, good to be here.
Well, now tell me, this is such a matter of concern for everyone else in the country. Is it a matter of any surprise to the people in Florida?
Well, I don't think anybody's surprised in Florida. I think that your last guest has vastly overstated the situation. One of the things that makes Florida, that makes this problem rather difficult to understand is that we have 67 different election supervisors. And the law here, like many states, gives each election supervisor a lot of control over what happens in their counties. Uh-huh. They get to pick the kind of system they're going to use to vote on. They have total control over counting the ballots. And those who would suggest that Jeb Bush and Glenda Hood, his Secretary of State, control these things just don't understand what the law is in Florida.
Well, is that fair to say, though, because you do have some sort of broader changes in terms of absentee ballots, and the felon list was delivered to these election supervisors?
We have changes that were made in the law as a result of the 1998 election in Miami where there were a lot of dead people voting. However, most of those changes were never approved by the federal government, which has to approve changes in the elections law in Florida, and they declined to approve most of those absentee ballot concerns. That's the reason the legislature went back and made it easier to vote by absentee ballot. A great many absentee ballots were being thrown out because people didn't have the witnesses that were required of the old system, and they weren't properly done. And so the effort here is to allow more people to vote than voted before.
Because that requirement for having a witness is no longer there in the absentee ballot?
Well, because people don't really understand that, and they frequently screw it up when they turn in their ballot.
How?
By not having the witness sign properly.
Oh, okay.
It's amazing to me how many people don't understand simple instructions for how to vote. They can get a ballot that says mark for one candidate here, and they'll mark for two, and they don't understand it.
I know. It's true.
And
it's
saw that widespread during the 2000 election where people simply didn't understand what they were doing. And I guess this is people not really paying attention to what they're doing or people who don't really care about what they're doing. Now, I do think Floridians value the vote more now than they did in the year 2000. They don't want their vote to be among those thrown out. And we are having a tremendous number turn out for early voting and for absentee voting this year. I don't know who's going to be left to vote on Election Day because we've had such heavy turnout.
Can I just get you briefly here, Lucy? You're sounding certainly more optimistic than Anne-Louise Bardek was. Are you somewhat optimistic?
I am somewhat optimistic.
Okay.
Now, I don't suggest that we have solved every problem, nor do I think anybody has. I think in a close election, these problems will surface and be highlighted. And Florida is going to be the recipient of this scrutiny more than anybody else because we essentially deserve it. In 2000, when we were under the spotlight, it happened that I was traveling to Chicago a week later, and I saw where something like 250,000 votes had been thrown out because people marked their ballots wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what was happening in Florida. But Chicago got no scrutiny over it.
Well, I don't think the race was as close.
It wasn't as close. And, the election supervisors in Florida in the years where we had punch card ballots, which we no longer have, the election supervisors tell me that they went to bed every year the night before election praying for a landslide.
Lucy, hold that thought. We're just going to take a short break here and stay with us. We'll get back to you after the break. We're talking tonight about election clouds hanging over the Sunshine State and how to avoid another voting fiasco in Florida. Can you believe that 4 years later we're still trying to figure this out? After the 2000 debacle, shouldn't Florida have a paper trail of votes? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Jennifer Westaway sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jennifer Westaway, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about elections in Florida and avoiding another fiasco. From hanging chads to butterfly ballots to electronic voting, what's the best way to ensure a clean vote in November? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm speaking with Lucy Morgan, Tallahassee Bureau Chief of the St. Petersburg Times, and I'd also like to bring into the conversation John Kennedy, Tallahassee Bureau Chief of the Orlando Sentinel. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Good evening.
Do you think there's a chance that all the attention given to the election scandals may be a turnoff in 2004 for voters in Florida?
Well, there is a possibility of that. We've seen some indications in polls already that that voters, particularly black voters in Florida, have a more mistrust of whether or not their vote will be counted. Part of that may be fueled by a lot of these stories that have been going around about the touchscreen machines in the state, the felon voter list, which went out earlier and was rescinded by Governor Bush's administration after all kinds of problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is undermining somewhat the confidence, particularly among black voters. And in that case, Democrats in the state have been fueling a lot of the speculation about whether or not this system is going to work in Florida, and it has the potential of having a backlash on Democrats. Black voters in this state are predominantly Democrats, and if they don't feel that their vote's going to get counted, there is the possibility that maybe they just won't go vote.
Well, now there's a way for the Democrats to shoot themselves in the foot. walk me through whatever went on with the state troopers and African-American voters in Florida, because this was very strange.
Well, there's the story has kind of morphed in various ways nationally.
I want the true one.
Yeah, there's been the mayoral race in Orlando earlier this year was settled by a very narrow margin, and questions about voter irregularities occurred in that, mostly along the lines of people being hired to get out the vote in the black community for the Democratic mayor. I mean, it's a nonpartisan race, but the mayor of Orlando, Buddy Dyer, is a former Democratic state senator and, is widely known as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
He wound up narrowly winning his race without the need for a runoff. However, against that backdrop, there has been questions about what efforts were made in the black community to get out the vote, money being exchanged to some of his supporters that got out the vote. They're kind of hired campaign workers. And by virtue of that, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement is investigating this election. And as part of their approach to this investigation, they chose to interview some black voters, some elderly, and in their homes, the FDLE people that went in plain clothes, but there's a lot of anecdotal stories of them, walking in and taking off their jacket, the elderly person seeing their sidearm and being alarmed by that. A lot of the alarm seems to have come about sort of after the fact. There was not a lot of word of this when it occurred. It seemed to be, in many respects, kind of a routine investigation, if I can call, questions about a mayoral race routine. But at the time, it didn't seem that that alarming. Yet it has now reached the national stage, and I guess what I'm saying is maybe it sounds a lot worse than maybe it really was.
Okay, Lucy Morgan, I'd like to get your read on that too. Is it overblown? Do you think was this not really a case of state troopers intimidating African voters?
First of all, they weren't state troopers; they were plainclothes agents from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement.
Fair enough.
Which is the agency which is designated by law to investigate public corruption. They do not wear uniforms. They're pretty low-key guys for the most part, and they would have been pretty derelict in their duty if they didn't go ask questions of the people who were alleged to be involved in voter fraud.
Okay, fair enough. I want to bring someone else in here, too, who played a part in bringing one of Florida's most recent election scandals to the public. Joining us from Miami is Lita Rodriguez-Tassif, chair of the Miami-Dade Reform Coalition, a nonpartisan organization focused on election reform. Lita, welcome.
Good evening.
How did the Miami-Dade Reform Coalition come about?
We formed ourselves after September 2002, and notice I didn't say after November 2000. We came about because we saw firsthand in Miami, once we started using DREs or electronic voting machines, we started seeing the problems and came together in order to fix those problems.
Okay. What kinds of problems were you seeing in 2002?
In 2002, we were seeing the kinds of problems that I think a lot of places are going to see this November. And those included machines that did not boot up on time, long lines as a result of the inability to open polls, problems with what they call calibration, which is a problem that happens with touchscreens where the membrane is sensitized in the wrong place. So when you hit one spot, it pop up the candidate that you didn't want to vote for, and I think that caused a lot of fear and intimidation in people because they thought that that meant that there was a conspiracy going on to deny them their vote.
It is a little unnerving to touch someone and vote for them and have someone else's name come up on the screen.
Exactly, and there was poor education about the problem of calibration, so people really were not educated enough to understand that this was a mechanical problem and not a conspiracy.
Right. Okay, that was beginning in 2002. How do you feel now in 2004 about the efforts made to address some of these concerns?
The efforts have varied widely throughout the state of Florida and across the country. And Miami-Dade County, which is one of the largest counties in Florida, and the biggest purchaser of electronic voting machines, has been kind of guilted and shamed into making very progressive reforms of their electronic voting machines and also of their entire voting system. And so I think that at least our county has made a lot of progress. With regard to the rest of the state, there has been varying degrees of improvement, some of which has been gradual. And with respect to the Secretary of State's office, and you were talking about that earlier, the Secretary of State has been an agent for no change and has basically done everything in her power to limit the ability of different communities and counties to really bring about positive reforms that would improve the voting system for all the voters.
Lita, I'd like to bring a caller in on this. Peter, you're calling from Hamilton.
Yes.
You're welcome to On Point.
Thank you. I was in Boston today, but I was in Florida during the 2000 election, and as a 14th generation New Englander, I thought it was a fascinating process.
That would be one word, yeah.
And you know, the Democrats controlled Florida for a long time, and very few blacks or Hispanics voted. It was, you know, very, very controlled. I think that enormous problems were brought out because the man I voted for didn't win by a big margin. I was a Gore voter,
mm-hmm.
and I was fascinated with what happened and what the reaction was. I wish, you know, he had won his own state as well as Florida, but he didn't. It wasn't a landslide in one way or the other, and to examine our voting system so closely is, I think, a very positive thing. I think Florida represents the Hawaii of the East. There's so many cultures and so many new people coming there, and how that voting system works should be a model instead of a pariah. I think that you know, we're very fortunate here in the United States to practice democracy, and it is a practice. It's not a perfect thing, and
mm-hmm.
I'm going to love to hear more of the conversation that you've been having with these wonderful people. It's exciting to me.
Peter, thank you for joining us. Lita, can I turn some of that over to you? How many improvements have been made here? I mean, we're talking about some of the things that have gone wrong. What's going to go right, do you think?
I'm sorry. One of the funniest things about what is going on now is that a lot of people are comparing Florida to November of 2000, and they shouldn't. We had our huge crisis in September of 2002, and we learned many, many lessons, some good, some bad. The positive lessons that we've learned in Florida is that we have a more complex understanding probably than anyone in the country about touchscreen voting and electronic voting. Mm. And by that I mean that Floridians understand that there is no need for a vast conspiracy for these machines not to work, that computers by definition are imperfect technology, and that the problems that we're experiencing aren't as a result of some vast conspiracy, but merely as a result of imperfect technology that was purchased very quickly in most places. And, for example, in Miami-Dade County, we purchased prototypes. We purchased things that had never been produced, marketed, sold, or used anywhere in the world. And we purchased them to be used in one of the most populous, diverse counties in the entire country, a county that required voting in three languages. Mm. So we've learned, I think, positive changes that include just a very complex understanding of the technology, and that has led to efforts to, you know, and you were mentioning it earlier, what paper safeguards are there, what paper records are there. We're looking beyond that and looking at why anybody would want paper. We're looking at audits. We're looking at certainty. We're looking at verification and how do we verify with the tools that we had. Now, I will tell you that in the negative sphere, we have learned, in Miami-Dade County at least, to run our elections using government employees instead of civilians, which is the American tradition. We have learned to run elections by turning on the machines the night before, leaving them on all night, unattended in most cases, and then hoping and praying that people will trust those machines in the morning. And the reason we have to do that is because of the long boot-up times. And we have also learned to throw millions and millions and millions of dollars at our elections, something that is going to turn out to be a very, very dangerous lesson. So that's kind of the bad and the good for you.
Okay, thank you. I want to turn to someone who's been watching Florida's reform efforts quite closely. Bill Cowles is the president of the Florida State Association of Supervisors of Elections, and he joins me from West Orange County, Florida. Thank you for joining us, Bill. Welcome.
Welcome, and thank you for having me.
I'd like to turn that question that I just put out there to you in terms of what you think has been done to improve the situation in 2004.
Well, I think the first thing you got to look at is that we came out of 2000, and in 2001, the Florida legislature stepped up to the plate, and this was even before federal legislation was being drafted, and they outlined several steps for improvement. First off, we decertified paper ballots. We had one county where they had two precincts and they voted on paper and they hand counted the results. We had one county who used the lever machines and they decertified those and we sold them to New York as parts. And then you had the touch punch card system, and those machines were also decertified. And so the legislature put out over $30 million to the counties to switch to one of two systems. It was either optical scan or the new touchscreen technology.
Okay.
And so they put money out there. Then on top of that, we have streamlined our recount procedures. We streamline voter intent issues, and the legislature put money out there for voter education. So significant changes made in 2001, which we used then in 2002 when we conducted our statewide elections where Jeb Bush was reelected governor of the state. And so as we come into 2004, there's no county in Florida using a new voting system, because this will be our second statewide elections with all these changes in place.
Okay. On that, though, on the electronic voting machines, you can just satisfy my own curiosity here. What is the thinking behind there being no paper trail for that? I mean,
Well, first off, it kind of goes hand in hand with the fact that at first when the technology came out, the technology was not developed with a paper trail, and now the issue of paper trail has only come up in since 2002. And now, you know, the Federal Election Assistance Commission was appointed very late. They haven't set up their standards. And so no standards have been made, which means the vendors are holding off on developing a product until they know what the federal standards are going to be. And so we're kind of in this catch-22 with, you know, the vendors are holding back, so there is not a product. And in Florida, the counties cannot buy voting equipment until it's been through the federal testing and then through state testing. So there is no piece of equipment that has been brought into the state to be certified so that the counties can use it.
Okay, in time for November anyway.
Now, there are counties who have allocated money for printers for receipts if they become available.
Okay, so they're ready and waiting there. I'm interested in what your opinion is of how all the talk about the possibility of problems in November might affect voter turnout. We've had some comments earlier that they think that it might discourage Democrats from voting, particularly African Americans.
Well, I think the fact that the lessons that were learned in 2000 brought forward to 2002, and one of the criticism in the gubernatorial race in Florida in 2002 was that the African American population did not come out to vote. And so there's been great effort in that area to reach all of the minorities to increase their participation in the 2004 election. And of course, it's interesting in our society, but why is it that people are more interested in voting for president, but they don't vote for state, local, or city elections?
Or city there, too. We're going to have to lose you, Bill, but thank you very much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
Bill Cowles is the president of the Florida State Association of Supervisors of Elections. He spoke with me from West Orange County, Florida. And we have some very patient guests who've been waiting quietly in the background. Lucy, Lita, and John, stay with me. We're going to take a quick break and we'll get back to you after that. We're discussing the Florida elections. Can you believe that 4 years later, we're still trying to figure out how to count votes in Florida? Do the controversies in Florida undermine your confidence, or is overreaction making the problem worse? Are you optimistic about the chances for a clean count? Are you pessimistic? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. The Florida elections, and what will the recount be like in 2004? I'm Jennifer Westaway, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jennifer Westaway, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about election reform in Florida and whether it will happen in time for the November presidential election and do the trick. Can you believe that 4 years later we're still talking about how to count votes in Florida? Do the controversies undermine your confidence in the system, or is there an overreaction to 2000? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm speaking with Lucy Morgan, Tallahassee Bureau Chief of the St. Petersburg Times, and John Kennedy, Tallahassee Bureau Chief of the Orlando Sentinel. And from Miami, Lita Rodriguez-Tassif, Chair of the Miami-Dade Reform Coalition. I'd like to bring another caller into our conversation. Candace is calling from Ringwood, New Jersey. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
Well, to answer your question, I am pessimistic. The problem with the paper vote the last time around was that they weren't clearly written. People weren't clear about who they were voting for.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have machines to replace them, millions of dollars, untested machines that are easy to hack, no paper trail. I don't understand why this is considered we have learned our lesson. We haven't learned our lesson. Our lesson is that We need to have something clear, something that can be recounted if need be, something that can't be hacked or dishonestly dealt with. I'm appalled by the fact that this has been allowed to happen. I mean, the company that produces these machines, CEO, or I'm not sure who it is very close associate of President Bush.
Yeah,
how does this happen?
He works for him in Ohio. He is one of his supporters in Ohio, a get-out-the-vote guy. John Kennedy, if I can turn to you on that, what is the thinking of the people in Florida on how likely they're going to be able to get an official and correct count in November?
Well, I think, it's one of those deals where I think maybe a plurality of people think it's going to work correctly. I wouldn't say a majority, but I think, somewhere in the 40% range may think that this is going to work and there shouldn't be a problem. These machines are a vast improvement over what we had. However, there's anecdotes all along the way of problems so far. I mean, the one of the cases that brought a lot of concern was just earlier this year. There was a state house race in Broward County. There was only one contest on the ballot, and a Republican candidate won a 12-vote victory over another Republican, and 137 ballots were cast without the machines registering a vote. That left a lot of people, shaking their heads, saying, "How could that be? You go to the polling place, you put in your name, and you get one election to vote in, and you don't vote. That seems implausible."
Mm.
Now, the defenders of the system say, this was a Republican race, the only one on the ballot in a Democratic-dominated county. The view was that perhaps people were bussed in from the condos or whatever, got to the polling place and saw, hey, I only got a Republican to vote for here. I'm not going to vote for either one of them. So after they kind of, plug in their vote, they choose not to cast a vote.
Is there a way to spoil your ballot on the machine?
Sorry?
Is there a way to spoil your ballot on the machine? I mean, some people use that as a kind of a form of a protest.
Sure. Well, that's something that the designers of the system, the two companies, Election Systems and Software and Sequoia Systems, are used in Florida. They would make the case that not really, that you are given ample opportunity to respond, to how you want to vote and whether this is the way you want to vote. But yes, you can. You can skip elections by choice. Skip contests by choice, and vote for one and not vote for the other. But as I say, this particular anecdote sort of lives on as a real life example of how did that happen. And I think there's a lot of that kind of cloud over the Florida election system right now that a lot of people just don't trust it.
Okay. Back to the phones now. Jack calling from Poland, Maine. Jack, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. I'm the IT director for a research and development company working in technology.
Mm-hmm.
I know a little something about new technology. You don't use it for something that matters. You use proven technology for something that matters. And if you must use new, unproven technology for something that matters, you darn well do something alongside it to check the...
We just lost him there, but I think what he's saying there is to check the results. You do a sort of a backup system. Lita Rodriguez-Tasef, that seems to be a pretty coherent point from an IT guy. What do you think of that?
A completely coherent point. And, the vendors knew this when they designed this equipment. And, one of the most interesting things that I think needs to be put back into this debate is that most people will tell you that these systems do not produce a paper trail.
Mm-hmm.
They are absolutely incorrect. The systems do produce a paper trail. It's a rather good one. The only thing is, it is not a voter-verified paper trail, but I will tell you that paper trail gives you very detailed information about every event that happens on each and every voting machine, and it gives you what is called a randomly sorted ballot image of every vote that is cast, meaning that you get to see exactly who voted for what, And the only thing is that it's randomly sorted, so you can't identify the voter. But the information is there, and the technology already produces very good backups that we don't bother looking at. One of the most interesting things is nobody in the country is printing out these paper trail backups and looking at them on election night to do what I think it's his name is Bill, our caller, mm-hmm. the IT guy, was talking about. There has to be right now in November an analysis of the backup trails that are produced by the machine, because right now there is no voter verified paper record, so you might as well look at the trails, and nobody seems to be pushing for that.
Lucy, Lucy, is that you? I was going to give you last word there.
They talk about this being new technology. In fact, it's not new technology. There are some jurisdictions in which this technology has been used for years and worked, and it survived recounts and court tests and lots of things. It is new to Florida. We have a lot of elderly voters who are confused by any ballot. I mean, we had people during the 2000 election who went in and looked at a thing that said, choose one of these candidates, and they chose two. Or they didn't choose any. And you cannot have a perfect system because the human beings that are voted on that system are not perfect.
Right. But I don't think that anyone here is talking about a perfect system. But they are at least talking about something that you can back up and verify.
Well, yeah, I think you raised the point of, you know, like in most of our lives, we're accustomed to dealing with ATMs, but I think many of us will ask for a receipt.
Good point.
If you run your credit card at the gas pump, there's probably a chance that you will ask for a receipt.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in this case, the elections people say that you cannot provide a receipt to a voter because there is some concern about it being used as proof in the event of buying,
sure.
You know, corruption.
Yeah, selling your vote.
Yeah. Now, how widespread that is, well, I don't know. Yeah,
in Orlando, John.
Maybe. But I guess it is a question of risk and reward, and I think a lot of this issue with the election system is one of how much money do you want to pour into these systems?
I'm afraid we have to wrap it up there, John. Thank you so much to all of you for joining us tonight. Lucy Morgan, John Kennedy, and Lita Rodriguez-Tassif, thank you for being here. Lucy Morgan is Tallahassee Bureau Chief for the St. Petersburg Times. John Kennedy, Tallahassee Bureau Chief for the Orlando Sentinel. Lita Rodriguez-Tassif is chair of the Miami-Dade Reform Coalition. You can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. This is On Point. Iraq's top Shiite cleric, Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, made a dramatic return to Najaf today and swiftly won agreement from rebel cleric Muqtada al-Sadr to end 3 weeks of fighting between his militia and the U.S.-led Iraqi forces. The agreement, however, does not signal an end to violence across the country. The United States now has 145,000 troops stationed in Iraq, many of whom have had their deployments extended long over their scheduled return home. Some soldiers, however, are coming home. Roman Diaz, a 21-year-old in the Army's 1st Armored Division, is one of them. He was in Iraq for almost a year and a half. His mother, Sue Diaz, is a frequent contributor to On Point. In this radio diary, she describes the relief she felt when her son finally came home.
The glowing red numbers of the digital clock near my side of the bed read 1:23. Wide awake, I'm lying here listening for the front door to open. Our 20-year-old son came home yesterday after 15 months in Iraq. Tonight he's out with a couple friends he's known since grade school. Johnny and I are going over to Nicole's, okay, Mom? Roman said, after the party that officially welcomed him home had wound down, after the deli platters in the dining room were bare, the salsa bowls empty, and the homemade Oreo cookie cheesecake little more than a sweet memory. In the months his infantry unit was based in and near Baghdad, I can't count how many nights I watched this clock's red numbers flip toward morning. A certain amount of sleeplessness is an inevitable part of parenthood, But things like colic and missed curfews, I've learned in the last 15 months, can't hold a candle to roadside bombs and Shiite militia. When Roman was still in Iraq, he had initially said no way to the whole idea of us throwing a party when he returned. He's always been a quiet kid, more comfortable in front of his computer than in front of a crowd. And that partly explains his reaction. But it must have been hard, too, for him to imagine a room full of welcome back balloons while he was still in the midst of falling mortars, or to envision red, white, and blue streamers fluttering here in the living room, when only the week before, one of his Bravo company buddies went home in a flag-draped box. The party question had come up again in a phone conversation shortly after he arrived in Germany, where his division is based, and where he returned for 2 weeks of debriefing before flying home to California. A party? Well, okay, sure, I guess, he said. It's 1:32 now, and I'm lying here replaying it all. The garage door banners up and down our street, the long hugs, the smiles, the flowers, the merengue music from the stereo in the family room, the way the slanting rays of the setting sun backlit and burnished the whole happy group of friends and neighbors on the patio. I see him standing out there in the middle of a cluster of men, and overhear him telling them the story of the day he was chased by three camels on a dusty road. For comic effect, he does an imitation of those animals' faces just before they spit. I'd run faster, they'd run faster, he says, pumping his arms as if he's still running. The men laugh, but the group grows quiet as he relates how, in an effort to leave those camels behind, he made a sharp turn off the road and into a field of scrub and rocks, only to notice that the ground around his feet was dotted with landmines the enemy hadn't even bothered to bury. Whoa, one of the guys says solemnly. Yeah, I know, Roman answers. And I sense, more than know, that there are stories from this war that he will never tell. It's 1:36, and the front door finally creaks open. When he still lived at home and got in this late, I'd sometimes catch him slinking past our room on the way to his. But tonight, he heads here first, opens our door, and comes right in. From the vantage point of my pillow, I see a tall, shadowy figure stride past the dresser, turn left at the foot of the bed, and come to a halt inches from my side. Roman? I murmur. In the darkness, he slowly bends toward me. His hand finds my cheek, and I feel his lips press against my forehead. Love you, Mom, he whispers. Before I can blubber anything in reply, he's walking around to the other side of the bed and leaning down to kiss his sound asleep dad. And so our soldier has returned. One homecoming of thousands across this country since the war began. And even though it's not over, in Iraq and over here, I close my eyes. And for the first time in a long time, I know what peace feels like.
Sue Diaz is a freelance writer and a contributor to the Christian Science Monitor. She lives in San Diego, California. I'm Jennifer Westaway, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.